previous frameworks, all of them on that list, didn't manage to unscramble causal and inferential concepts. And I don't expect you to know exactly what I mean by that right now, but by the end of the talk, I hope you will. So I'll try to situate kind of the philosophical ideas which went into these approaches. I'll start with some remarks on operationalism, because most of those approaches are sort of starting from the operationalist point of view. So operational frameworks often try to be minimalist descriptions of some experiment that everyone agrees upon. And if that's your goal in defining an operational framework, then you can ask, well, what do the circuits in such a framework represent? Well, it better be something that everyone agrees upon. And there's only one type of structure which everyone agrees upon. That's the manifest structure. You go to the laboratory, you look at what kind of devices you've wired together, how you've wired them together. And just by looking at that, you want to write something down that everyone will agree that represents this experiment. And so maybe an example of that in a Bell scenario, I think everyone agrees you're preparing a bipartite system and then performing local measurements on it. You can just read that off kind of by looking at what's done in the laboratory. But then what role is there for causal structure? If you want to talk about causal structure in an operational theory, it seems like then you must somehow have that be encoded in the probabilistic structure of the theory. And I think if you're an operationalist, maybe this makes sense to you. If every concept has to be defined in terms of the way that we measure it, then the same should be true for causation. So we've seen this already at least twice in this conference. So in Alex's talk, he gave a definition of causality, which he cited Hitchcock, which says C is a cause of E if and only if the probability of E given C is greater than the probability of E given not C. So that's defining causation in terms of some conditions on observable probabilities. And in the Pavia approach, we've also seen the causality axiom in this conference. So there, the definition of causality is the probability of preparations is independent of the choice of future observations. So defining causality in terms of observed probabilities. And so, as I said, maybe that makes sense if you're a strict operationalist, but we're going to take issue with this approach. So there's kind of a really simple example which shows why there's a problem here. It's the Vernon cipher. So imagine you have three classical bits, and you've arranged so that E always takes the value of C plus H mod 2, and the probability of H is equally likely to be 0 or 1. So both probabilities are half. And now you can just compute the probability of E given C equals 0, and the probability of E given C equals 1 are both just a half. The value E here is equally likely to be 0 or 1, regardless of what value C takes. So compare this now with this definition. This definition says C is not a cause of E because this condition is not met. And yet clearly by construction here, C is a cause of E. So you can't just look at correlations and read off causality. And this is a very simple example of that. There's kind of more famous examples like Simpson's paradox, where people have tried to argue that correlation doesn't imply causation. So I'm not going to go through this in depth, but basically you've got two classical variables, recovery and treatment. So we're imagining some drug trial, and you look at the overall correlation between them and you say, oh, it looks like the drug's helping. There's a positive correlation here. But if you look at any subset of people with any particular blood pressure, so you condition on their blood pressure, and you find for every subset, there's a negative correlation. So it seems like the drug doesn't help. It hurts. And now you're a doctor and you have to decide based on the statistics, do I give the drug or not? And it's unclear, should you condition on blood pressure or should you use the aggregate data? And depending on your choice, you're either going to help or hurt your patient. So to make these kind of causal conclusions, operational data just isn't enough. And the sort of modern resolution to Simpson's paradox is to say, you can't answer this question with just operational data. You need some causal hypothesis. So you supplement this data with a DAG, and there are different possible causal hypotheses, like that the blood pressure is a mediator between treatment and recovery, or that it's a common cause of treatment and recovery. And there are good sort of physical reasons why a doctor might suspect that one of these two is the case. And you need to put in that assumption. And then once you have that assumption, there's a rigorous framework which tells you how whether to use the aggregate data or the segregated data. And depending on which choice you use, you get different conclusions about whether the drug helps or not. So this is kind of all captured, this rigorous approach is captured in Pearl's approach to causality. And that's sort of the recent approach that's blossomed in recent years, where causation is primitive. It's something you have to put in some causal assumptions. And then these causal assumptions constrain probability assignments. And you try to figure out what can you say under some minor causal assumptions. You try to derive more than you put in, basically. So that's the approach that we're going to take, essentially. So returning to my remarks on operationalism, we aren't going to take this approach where we represent manifest structure, because then I don't see any way to talk about causality in a philosophically well-grounded manner. Instead, we're going to have the circuits in our framework represent causal structure. And note that this requires a commitment from the user of the framework. So you can't have it both ways. You can't be this minimalist description that everyone will agree upon and still try to represent causal structure. I think many previous approaches have kind of spoken loosely about both of these types of structure, but I think you really have to make a choice here. So for example, in the Bell scenario, you can decide whether you think this is the causal structure, or if you believe there's some superluminal influence, then maybe this is the causal structure. And that's a choice that will be made by the user of our framework. Okay, so why is this recent framework for classical causal inference been so successful? I think one of the key insights is separating out causation and inference. And I think that our current foundational frameworks have not achieved the same separation. And we're going to try to rectify that. And the fact that these frameworks fail to achieve this separation, as I said, it's probably not going to be obvious. And the best way to see it is going to be, I'm going to go through a lot of examples as I set up our framework. But I want to lead with one specific motivation, which has come up many times in conferences, especially on ontological representations of operational theories. And it's regarding the notion of a mixture of procedures. So for now, I'm just going to be talking about procedures as lists of lab instructions. And there have been two previous ways of talking about mixtures of procedures, the physical approach and the inferential approach. And I want to contrast those. The physical approach says procedure P is a mixture of two other procedures, P1 and P2, if it's defined as follows. You sample a binary variable X according to some weights. You set up a mechanism that chooses whether P1 or P2 is implemented depending on the value of X, and then don't keep a record of the value of X. So it's a physical wiring of procedures in the laboratory, a map from two procedures to one procedure. And past work has taken this physical attitude towards defining mixtures, and it's claimed that the representation of P, say in a GPT or in an ontological model, must be the mixture of the representations of P1 and P2. And this is kind of a key assumption that goes into a lot of no-go theorems. It's really doing a lot of work for us. And because of that fact, people have challenged it and tried to say, well, is this really a good assumption? And they've come up with a lot of problems, and these problems come up at many of the conferences that I go to. So the first problem that I've heard the most often is, well, for this to even be well-defined, it better be that when you're setting up these physical mechanisms, you're flipping a coin, you're wiring up your procedures to depend on the value of that coin, it better be everything you're doing is somehow autonomous from the procedures themselves. In other words, when you flip the coin, you want to make sure it's not affecting the way that those procedures are behaving in the laboratory. Furthermore, another thing I often hear is, what does it mean to not keep a record of X? Do you need to throw all the records in a black hole? Does nature even allow for fundamental erasure of information? And furthermore, if you need to do these physical wirings to achieve a particular mixture, then who's to say all possible mixtures will be allowed? Might it be that a physical theory prevents you from doing certain kinds of wirings of systems, or maybe doesn't allow you to have coins with arbitrary probability weights, or something like that? And finally, just formally speaking, if you've just taken the space of procedures to be a set, it's just a set of these kind of structureless objects, then there's no intrinsic convex structure. And hence, you might want to formalize this claim here as kind of a linear map, but you can't easily do it because this concept here is kind of nebulous. There's no notion of a sum of two lists of lab procedures a priori. So contrast all that with the inferential point of view, which we're going to be advocating for in this approach. Now, instead of talking about this as a procedure which takes two lab procedures into one, it's going to be a map which takes two states of knowledge to another state of knowledge. So this, imagine you have some state of knowledge about what procedure was done. That state of knowledge can be a mixture of two other procedures. For example, the state where you know that it was procedure P1 or P2. And so the first thing to note is the set of states of knowledge about procedures does have some intrinsic convex structure. So formally, you can write down just a state of knowledge as a mixture of two other states of knowledge, maybe the delta functions on P1 and P2. And it follows just from this convex structure and the fact that the law of total probability is linear, this assumption here that I mentioned earlier just follows directly from linearity. So it's all kind of clean and precise and formal. And furthermore, there's no need for this assumption of autonomy And there's no need for any erasure of any records because I haven't said anything about physical mechanisms in the laboratory. I'm just talking about some things that an agent is reasoning about.
Is there any assumption of causality that you're taking here?
Of causality? I guess I don't understand what you're asking. So here there's all kinds here there are all kinds of causal assumptions. Like this autonomy is a causal assumption. But here I'm imagining sort of this is a procedure that happens in the mind of an agent. So unless you want to go model the mind of an agent causally.
This correspondence between probabilities and operations, like in post-selected quantum theory, you don't quite have that coming out naturally. Like it doesn't correspond to tossing coins and doing stuff.
So maybe hold on to that. That's the kind of distinction that I'm going to be talking about throughout the talk. So, and so finally, this kind of explains why all possible mixtures should be allowed, because you can imagine circumstances wherein the agent has led to arbitrary states of belief. So that was all kind of a detailed discussion of this particular mixture procedure, which takes, in the case of quantum theory, two quantum states to another quantum state. But similar things can be said for coarse graining. So people talk about coarse graining sometimes as wiring together measurement devices. And then you have all the same problems of needing those wirings to be autonomous and so on. And in our framework, it's going to be more like just the logical disjunction of propositions. And throwing away a system or tracing in quantum theory is going to be more like ignoring a system. It is just going to be ignoring a system. And the map, which is sort of tracing with some effect, post-selection is just conditioning in our framework. It's the mental operation of looking at a subset of your data. And even the notion of what a quantum state and a quantum effect is, or GPT state in effect, is going to be modified in our framework. But it's a bit more subtle, so this is more like foreshadowing what's to come. I won't walk you through that right now. So this is all a very quick motivation for why you should take the inferential point of view. First of all, it's more general, and maybe this sort of gets at what Ognan was asking. If you are in the laboratory actually doing these wirings, and you make sure you have the right assumptions of autonomy and so on are satisfied, then you can perfectly model that with the inferential point of view. So it subsumes the physical interpretation, but it's a bit cleaner. And it avoids problems like the problems of autonomy and erasure that I motivated on the previous slide. And as I also vaguely hinted at on the previous slide, it resolves some formal issues with describing or with some definitions regarding ontological modeling. So that was what actually got us into this framework in the first place. We were trying to resolve these issues, and then we realized the problem goes much deeper. And that's what I'm going to now describe by telling you about our framework. So, okay, two quick preliminaries. These are preliminaries that we've already seen in Alex's talk. So process theories, we're going to work with process theories. A process theory G is a collection of processes which have some input and output systems, which are closed under forming diagrams. So here you see, if I take process F, H, and G, which all have their input and output systems, and I wire them together, I get an effective larger process, which is also in the same process theory. And we're going to need the notion of a diagram-preserving map from one process theory, G, to another, which takes processes in one process theory to processes in the other process theory, such that diagrams are preserved. So we're going to denote such maps by these kinds of shaded boxes. So this is the application of this map, eta, to this process up here. And you can see their notational choice is a good one here. Why are we using the shaded box? Because it's manifestly diagram preserving. If you apply that map to F, H, and G independently, and then you wire them together in the same way, then you can see just kind of by sliding these around and stitching the edges of the green regions together, that these are manifestly the same diagram. So, okay, now what is an operational theory in our framework? It's a causal inferential theory of laboratory procedures. So this is the primitive out of which it's built, and these are the kinds of structures that we're going to embed in it. So very, just kind of the loose version before I give you the formal version. An operational theory has some causal structure and some inferential structure. The inferential stuff, for the purpose of this talk, is going to be very boring. It's all going to be classical, propositional logic, and Bayesian probability theory. The causal stuff is going to have the primitives, which are laboratory procedures, and the way that those are wired together to form causal structure. And then predictions are going to be dependent on both the causal structure and the inferential structure that you're interested in. So that's kind of informal. The way that we formalize it, as I said, is with process theories. So a causal inferential theory, or an operational theory, is a triple of process theories, proc, pi, and inf, and a triple of diagram-preserving maps between them. So I'm going to have to introduce these in steps. So the first procedural process theory contains all the causal stuff, like lab procedures and the way they're wired together. The inferential process theory contains classical probability theory and logic. And then the most interesting process theory, where all the magic happens, is when you have interactions between these two, interactions between the causal stuff and the inferential stuff. So the main kind of object in this theory is going to be states of knowledge about laboratory procedures. So the first process theory, PROC, how is it defined? Systems are, they come with various types, like classical, quantum, or so on. And processes are lists of lab instructions which come with associated inputs and outputs, input and output systems. So a transformation procedure just looks something like this. It's got an input system A, output system B. A preparation procedure has a trivial input system, non-trivial output system. And a measurement procedure in this process theory is something which has a classical system as its output. So this classical system encodes the output of the measurement. Nothing too exciting here. Just note that the classical systems will be denoted by light gray wires. And of course, because this is a process theory, you can compose processes to form larger processes. So here's what prepare measure scenario looks like just in the process theory and a more general scenario. And I want to stress that there are no equalities here. So a closed diagram, for example, is not a probability. A closed diagram is just a closed diagram. It's a sequence of procedures which are wired together. And the diagrammatic connectivity, we're demanding that you have some hypothesis about the causal structure and you represent that, not just the manifest structure of the experiment. What we're not representing in this process theory are any of the inferential stuff. So there's no trace here, there's no post-selection, no states of knowledge. It's all causal. And to help you keep track of everything, just note that everything here is vertical. Everything in the process theory PROC, the causal stuff, is vertical. The next process theory, INF, contains the inferential stuff, and everything in this process theory we're going to represent horizontally. You can just look at the diagrams and you can see which things are causal and which things are inferential. So if you have a state of knowledge about some inferential system X, it's going to be represented as a process like this. The stochastic updating of some state of knowledge is stochastic map, which we'll represent like this. And there's a notion of marginalization. Propositions, now there's a different kind of system here. You see the wires going to the left, this wire's going to the right. And you can attach a proposition onto some system X. To do so, we introduce this generator. So this lets you attach a proposition onto some system which you have a state of knowledge about. And then you can form closed diagrams like this one. So this diagram is equal to the probability that proposition pi is true about some system X which you have state of knowledge sigma about. To note that in this process theory, there are equalities. Closed diagrams are representing probabilities in kind of the obvious way here.
Sorry. Yes. One little bit. Is there a meaning to the direction of the arrow in the proposition? Could have been coming from the left.
So strictly speaking, there is a distinction between these two system types. And if you get into the weeds, you can define kind of the covectors where.
Because reading this way suggests somehow that you post select on this proposition being true or something like that. Couldn't one think of it as a kind of.
So far everything is descriptive. So this represents like I'm interested in a proposition pi about some system which I have a state of knowledge about. Mm-hmm. And then I ignore that system after I consider the proposition. I don't know if that answers the question.
Maybe I need to see more.
Yeah.
One more question.
Yeah.
What do the arrows represent?
Like the right and left arrow?
Yeah.
Basically, it's a pretty minor technical distinction, so don't get hung up on it. But basically, whether at present I've only defined for you states of knowledge and propositions, there are also kind of covectors, which would be like a proposition with a wire going into it. But those don't have a physical interpretation, they're just mathematical objects. So all of this can be embedded in the category stock. And in the case of propositions, they're embedded in the category rel. So like, if you try to underpin all this with category theory, there's technicalities. But let's leave those off.
Why is it essential to trace out, to discard my knowledge about this?
Just to have a closed map. So if you didn't discard it, you might come along and attach other propositions on, in which case this probability would change. But there's only a unique probability if you have a closed diagram.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is this process theory inf? Is it some fixed thing, or do you sort of choose the inf that you like?
Right. For this talk, it's going to be fixed.
Okay, so there is a particular process theory inf which you care about.
That's right.
For
our purposes,
thing.
But definitely it's an interesting question. What happens if you change your theory of inference? But for us, it's just going to be the classical one. It's just capturing in a formal way classical logic and probability theory. Okay. So now for the good stuff, which is when the causal and the inferential stuff interact. So this is the process theory procedural inferential process theory, PI. And to make things interact, we need some generators, which make the vertical and horizontal wires interact. So here's a simple one. It says, take your physical system and ignore it. Ignoring is an inferential operation, so we bent the wire just to represent that. And each time I introduce a generator, note that there are some obvious consistency constraints, like ignoring a composite system is the same as as ignoring the subparts of that composite. And I'm not going to introduce all of these consistency constraints just for the sake of time. So here's another generator, which says you've got some physical classical system, and you want to attach a proposition to it. So this could be like asking, is the state of that physical system x equals 5, or is it x greater than negative 3 or something? And now here's the key generator, which is really at the core of this process theory. Which allows us to have states of knowledge about procedures, transformation procedures from a system A to system B. So you can see there's an interaction between the inferential and the causal process theories, and it allows us to represent, here's the diagram. This says, I don't know exactly which transformation procedure maps system A to system B, but I have some state of knowledge sigma about that. So this set here is just the set of transformation procedures from A to B. And this whole diagram represents a state of knowledge about what's actually going on causally. And so now we can finally represent really what a prepare measure scenario looks like in our framework. It's not just the causal stuff, but it's the inferential stuff as well. So you have a state of knowledge sigma about what preparation procedure was performed, a state of knowledge tau about what measurement procedure was formed, where that measurement is encoded in some classical system X, and you're asking proposition pi about the outcome of the measurement, and then after that you're ignoring the system.
Is there no label on the preparation or the measurement box?
So there's no label on this generator.
No,
it's just a way to interact with you. So it's defined kind of by these system types. But strictly speaking, I should have put labels on these systems. And I've left them off just because you can read them off the diagram to remove a bit of clutter. Okay. So this is what a prepare measure scenario looks like, except there's more general prepare measure scenarios. Note here's a more general scenario, but note that the causal structure is exactly the same. The preparation procedure followed by a measurement procedure, but now you might have some correlated state of knowledge about the preparation and measurement procedures. So for example, maybe you know that they're aligned with respect to some reference frame, but you don't know what that reference frame is. In that case, you'd have some non-trivial correlated state of knowledge here. And then you can ask propositions, not just about the classical outcomes, but joint propositions also about the outcomes together with which measurement procedure and preparation procedure was performed, and maybe some ancillary stuff that's independent of the actual experiment that you're doing. So you can describe more general inferential stuff, and now you can start composing causally as well, and you can imagine you can represent quite complicated situations in a formal way here. So I've described for you now these three process theories, but I haven't told you anything about kind of how they're related to each other. But let me introduce the relations. They're actually quite simple. So how is the inferential stuff related to procedural inferential stuff? Well, it's just included. It's basically a sub-process theory, a closed set of processes in PI. So this diagram preserving map I here, if you like, you can think of it as an identity. It's basically an identity, or a better way to think of it is as the inclusion. So if you've got some stochastic map S in inf, for example, and you apply this diagram preserving map, you get the same stochastic map, but now it lives in the procedural inferential theory. So it's a pretty trivial relationship between this. The relationship between PROC and PI is slightly more complicated. Procedures, laboratory procedures, are not strictly in the procedural inferential theory. So this object is not in PI. But it's kind of clear how to map a procedure into a state of knowledge about a procedure. So if you apply E, it maps it into PI in the following way. It says, if you started with procedure T, then you map it to the state of knowledge, I know exactly which procedure occurred, it was T. So it's kind of trivial. You map the procedure into the perfect state of knowledge that that was the procedure that was done. So hopefully that's fairly intuitive. What's a bit less intuitive is that this definition here is still a valid diagram preserving map. But if you introduce the appropriate rules, then you find that it is a valid diagram preserving map. Okay, so that's basically, given this procedure, the causal stuff and the inferential stuff, then it's kind of unique how you construct the procedural inferential stuff out of them.
So just to confirm the notation,
yeah.
You probably said, so when you write this type A arrow B over line means knowledge about A arrow
so,
B.
So strictly this is a set, and it's the set of transformation procedures from A to B. And then this delta function is a state of knowledge.
The wire means type my knowledge about processes from A to B. So that's what it
is. Yeah, this system type is an inferential system. Uh-huh. And in this case, it's referring to the set of procedures from A to B. Yeah.
So are states of knowledge then kind of measures and you have some extra structure on the set? Or what do you assume about them?
Yes, and the states of knowledge have the usual structure of states of knowledge. And that's going to be important.
What's the usual structure of system?
We'll get there. It's a convex space.
Are there any equivalence classes?
Yes, we'll get to that. Okay.
Assume the set of procedures is finite.
I think for simplicity, yes.
Okay.
That.
Just an expedient assumption.
Okay. So everything I've said so far has been descriptive. I haven't said anything about making predictions or probabilities. Well, I said a little bit in the inferential theory, but about causal situations, I've said nothing about making predictions. How do we make predictions? Well, we do so with a diagram preserving map from the procedural inferential stuff back into the inferential theory. So for example, if I have this closed diagram, note that there's some causal stuff going on here, and I apply the prediction map, I get the probability that proposition pi is true, given that I had state of knowledge sigma about this preparation procedure. That's just kind of a really simple example. More generally, if you have diagrams that have open wires, like open horizontal wires here, then if you apply the prediction map, you get a stochastic map, which tells you basically if you stuck a proposition on here and a state of knowledge on here, the stochastic map tells you how you would update your predictions. And I want to note that this map is a partial map. It's only defined on processes that have no vertical inputs or outputs. So it's only defined for diagrams of this type, which are allowed to have open horizontal wires, but they're not allowed to have open vertical wires. So imagine you tried to write down a map like this, which described the probability you should assign to proposition pi. It's not unique, because the probability you assigned here would depend on the causal past. And this might not even be a classical system in general. So we're just going to define the probability map on this subset of the processes in PI. Okay? And I want to stress that the map, the prediction map, is not unique. It varies from one physical theory to another. It's kind of what defines the operational theory you're interested in. However, in every case, it's fully specified by the probabilities that it assigns to the perfect states of knowledge and the atomic propositions, which is kind of obvious in a sense, and it explains why previous formalisms were fine to just specify the probability distribution over outcomes given measurements, rather than probabilities about propositions given arbitrary states of knowledge, because such objects are in one-to-one correspondence with probabilities on atomic propositions and perfect states of knowledge about the procedures. So in other words, to summarize this, we're not innovating the way that probabilities are computed when you do, say, mixings or coarse grainings. Of course not. We're assuming classical probability theory. What we are changing is the structure of the theory, the objects in the theory, prior to considering probabilities. The structure is now at the descriptive layer, not just the probabilistic layer. So I think it's helpful to understand this stuff better, to think, what can we say about the usual notion of a GPT? A GPT, loosely speaking, is what is left of our framework when you quotient with respect to some notion of inferential equivalence. So let's go through that. So what's this notion of inferential equivalence that we're going to quotient with respect to? Well, consider an example here. We have a state of knowledge sigma and a different state of knowledge sigma prime about the transformations from A to B. And we say that these two are inferentially equivalent with respect to the prediction map P, if and only if, for every closed circuit you form, which might have open horizontal wires, but vertically it's closed, for every such circuit, when you apply the prediction map, you get exactly the same stochastic map. So in other words, if these two states of knowledge lead you to make the same inferences in every possible scenario in which they can arise, then we say they're inferentially equivalent. And you can show that this is a valid process theory congruence relation, which means, which we'll denote by this symbol as you see here, which means that you can define the quotiented theory. And I'll call the quotiented theory the procedural inferential with this quotienting hat on top of it. So in other words, here was the operational theory we started with. You quotient with respect to this equivalence relation, and you get some new quotiented theory. So we're quotienting this process theory to get this one. And of course, naturally then, if I compose this map E and this quotienting relation, then I get a map from here to here. And similarly, I can get maps back and forth here. But kind of the key map here is this quotienting map. And the elements of the quotienting theory contain all and only the information you need to make predictions. That's why you can kind of loosely speaking see this is what a GPT is in our framework. It's the thing where you've lost a lot of this structure, and formally you've quotiented with respect to this notion of equivalence. So what is a GPT state from our point of view? Well, it's something that's slightly more complicated than usual. It's got some causal stuff and some inferential stuff. It's an inferential equivalence class of different possible states of knowledge about some preparation procedure. What is a GPT effect? Well, this is a bit more complicated, but essentially it's an object which maps a GPT state, an object of this type, to a probability. So basically, it takes the GPT state, it closes it off vertically, and then it applies the prediction map. So I kind of need to pause to let this soak in, maybe. And if you try to describe this in English, it's kind of terrible. But forget the English, just look at the diagram. It clearly separates out what's going on. In particular, I think this is an instance where you can see something that looked very innocent in the GPT framework is seen to have all kinds of internal structure. So we've got propositions and states of knowledge and prediction maps and quotienting maps. So there's like a lot of structure. And our framework just kind of makes clear what that structure is. OK, so this is what an operational theory is for us. Question, what varies from one physical theory to the next? Well, I've already said the probability rule varies, and the set of possible procedures also vary. The things that stay the same are, at least for the purpose of this talk, the inferential theory and the way that you construct the procedural inferential theory out of these. So if you assume that this is the classical theory of inference, as I've done here, then there's a lot of features of operational theories that are common to all physical theories. So for example, the convexity of the space of states of knowledge, the convexity of states of knowledge sigma here, can be lifted formally. I'm not going to do it in this talk, but you can lift that formally to a convex structure on the space of GPT states, for example. You can derive the convexity of GPT state spaces formally from the inferential structure. And similarly, the set of propositions forms a Boolean lattice, and the set of kind of extended propositions when you have ancillary systems forms what's called a zonotope. And so it's just a formal mathematical structure I'm not going to go into here. And again, the structure of that inferential structure of zonotopes can be lifted to the space of GPT effects. So for a given measurement, the space of GPT effects is a zonotope. And I don't have time to detail that any further. But again, we're taking the structures in the inferential theory, and they're common to every physical theory. And we're lifting them to the basic elements of the in this case, GPT. OK, so in the last 5 or so minutes, I just want to show you that everything I've been saying applies also to ontological theories. That might not be obvious to you. It wasn't obvious to me, at least, going into this project. But it turns out that the usual notions of what an ontological model is has all the same scrambling of causal and inferential concepts. And luckily, this won't be too hard, because if this is an operational theory, an ontological theory differs only in one respect, which is the primitives out of which we build things. So instead of laboratory procedures, now we're going to talk about functional dynamics. But everything else is the same. We've got the classical inferential theory and the causal structure and the predictions, which depend on both the causal and the inferential stuff. So in other words, formally speaking, this triple of process theories gets turned into this triple where the only real difference is the procedural stuff has been turned into the process theory of functions. And the process theory of functions now, the main difference is that functions have a natural notion of composition. So there are equalities in this process theory. If you compose two functions, you get a new function which is strictly equal to it. And that extra structure, which is not in the procedural theory, is kind of what makes ontological theory so different from operational theories. In particular, there's a unique ontological theory. There's only one prediction map. There's only one probability rule in the ontological theory. You can derive that from the things that we've put in. Furthermore, we said there was a notion of inferential equivalence. So here, the main objects were states of knowledge about laboratory procedures, and some of those are inferentially equivalent, and you can quotient with respect to that. In ontological theories, same thing. We have states of knowledge now about functional dynamics, and some distinct states of knowledge about functional dynamics lead you to make all the same predictions. And you can quotient with respect to an equivalence relation defined in exactly the same way. Here, when you quotiented, you got out GPT. If you quotient our new notion of an ontological theory, you get out the thing that people have previously called ontological models. But you've lost a lot of structure. It might help to see an example. So consider functions from a bit to a bit. There's four such functions, the reset to zero, reset to one, identity function, and then the flip, or the not. In an ontological theory, the key objects are states of knowledge about functional dynamics. So let me just write down two examples. Here, you might have a probability distribution, which is I'm equally likely, or I believe with equal probability, that it was either reset to zero or reset to one. This is that state of knowledge. A second completely distinct state of knowledge is I think it's equally likely that it was the identity function or the flip function. So these states of knowledge are completely disjoint. Furthermore, think about them causally. These processes are causally disconnected. These processes are completely causally connected. So this whole distribution has support on the causally disconnected stuff. This one has full support on the causally connected stuff. There's very different ontological descriptions of what's going on. But if you quotient with respect to inferential equivalence, you find that for either of these states of knowledge, you're going to make the exact same predictions about the output given the input. In particular, your predictions will be described by the randomization stochastic map. So when you quotient, you get to what would usually be the description in an ontological model of these kind of processes as just the randomization stochastic map. But you've lost a whole lot of information. You lost all the causal information, for example, about whether there's a disconnection or a connection. All that information is preserved in our notion of an ontological theory. And as you might imagine, this has implications for things like what is non-contextuality. It's about the relationship between operational theories and ontological theories. And our framework kind of improves our understanding of what non-contextuality is. But I don't have time to go into that. So basically, to summarize, we saw operational theories, ontological theories. If you quotient them, you get back the things that people usually study. In our framework, ontological representation is a diagram preserving map from the operational process theory to the ontological process theory. And it's a non-contextual map if and only if there exists some second map which maps the GPT into the ontological model, such that this diagram commutes. It was all very elegant. It looks a little less elegant when you make it all formal with process theories, but that's it. I'm not gonna make you go through this. You can kind of get all the intuition from just the simpler picture. So that's all I wanted to say. Hopefully by now you've started to see some examples of how even simple things like GPT effects have a lot of internal structure, which you can only make precise if you start kind of pulling on the strings of what are the causal and the inferential aspects of different theories. And our framework lets you manipulate these independently. So we saw in this talk, we changed the procedural stuff, the causal stuff, but we kept the inferential stuff constant. And that allowed us to vary between operational theories and ontological theories. But you could also try to manipulate the theory of inference and keep the theory of procedures constant, for example. We've taken causal relations to be fundamental, not sort of tried to define them in terms of probabilities. And the kind of key concepts are states of knowledge about procedures. And so we're still writing this up, but thanks for your attention.
So I just have a quick question about when you're defining what you mean by an operational theory. You define I like the separation between inferential stuff and what you call causal stuff. But operationally, I don't understand the distinction between laboratory procedures plus causal structures. Wouldn't I mean, like, by a causal structure, shouldn't I define that in terms of operations ultimately? Like, if what I mean by something to cause something, I should define that in terms of some procedures I can do.
So note that I haven't actually given you a definition of causation in this talk.
Or it's something distinct from laboratory procedures, I guess.
Yes, I would say it is distinct, which is why I've kind of written them both down rather than tried to roll them into one. But the causal structure, loosely speaking, in this talk, it's formalized by the wirings together. So the laboratory procedures came with inputs and outputs, and it's the way that you wire them together and represent that as these vertical process in this vertical process theory, which basically, as a user of our framework, you should do in a way that represents your causal structure faithfully.
So,
now, how exactly to do that, you know, requires some effort.
Okay.
And where you got your causal hypothesis from in the beginning also requires some effort. That's why I was saying at the start, it requires kind of commitments on the part of the user of the framework. But we view that as a feature, not a bug.
I think it's noteworthy that if you understand laboratory procedures as they exist, just you know, listen to instructions what to do, there might be some sort of ghostly influence between this part of your experiment and this part, something that you didn't anticipate, you know, something that's not obvious. Well, that ought to be encoded in the causal structure hypothesis you make about your experiment, even if it's not there in any way in the instructions about how you're supposed to build this experiment.
Right. Like if you think in a Bell scenario that there's some superluminal influence, then you would use a very different causal structure.
Maybe I'll just say how I understand your remark about non-contextuality, and you can say whether this is a correct interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
So you have these, actually, yeah, if you put that slide up with the two arrows downward, maybe that's helpful. Yeah. So the idea here is that the kind of quotient we make to make a GPT may or may not be this compatible with the kind of quotient that we do to make an ontological model from these kind of unquotiented bits of data. And when they are compatible, that's exactly when I have a non-contextual theory. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's fair. You start with some operational theory, which then uniquely defines some quotiented theory. And then you consider a particular representation in an ontological theory. And if the quotiented version of that ontological theory is such that they're kind of compatible in the sense that one can be mapped to the other via diagram preserving map, and furthermore, kind of makes the same predictions, which implies some kind of commutativity here, then this representation is non-contextual. So it's a property of representation C here,
mm-hmm.
which holds if and only if there exists some other diagram preserving map. And essentially what it says is a representation is non-contextual if the inferential equivalence classes or inferentially equivalent objects in the operational theory, they don't have to be represented identically in the ontological theory. So here in our example we saw, for example, here are two very distinct procedures which are inferentially equivalent. So they're represented differently in the ontological theory, but it better be that they're inferentially the same. In
right.
other words, when you quotient these guys, then you should get the same thing out.
And if I take like quantum theory or something, is that there's no non-contextual representation whatsoever? Or okay, right. So that's kind of the strongest thing you can say about contextuality of the theory.
Yeah, there's no ontological theory such that that quotienting exists in the diagram.
Right.
Good, let's check David again.